Hello, everyone, and thanks for listening to The Quality Hub, chatting with ISO experts. I'm your host, Xavier Francis, and do we have a treat for you today. I'm here with AJ Pallera, National Sales and Marketing Manager at NQA, which is a global certification body. Thanks so much for being here, AJ.
Xavier, thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
We're happy to have you. Now, today is part one of a two-part series with AJ entitled, Let's Just Take a Little Peek Here. And we'll be looking at what registrars do, how audits are run, and what auditors look for in an audit. But first, let's learn a little bit more about AJ and his experience, and also what he does at NQA. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, AJ?
Yeah, absolutely, Xavier. So I started back in the ISO world working for a competitive registrar known as TUV back in 2018. So back then, my role was lead generation as well as some quoting. So really just minimal impact back end stuff is really fun, really overwhelming. So believe me when I say this, I understand like how much information there is to process for any company that's new to the world of ISO.
Oh my gosh, yes.
We feel your pain, and you know that's why I'm here today to try to make it as simple as possible.
And so when did you join up with NQA?
Yep. So NQA, I actually joined up in 2019 as a regional sales manager. And then in 2022, May, I actually moved up and took this new role. So really what that consists of is mostly back-end stuff. It's my title is sales and marketing, which essentially like 10% of my actual job. So a lot of the stuff is documentation, everything, and all the little things that you're in this industry you're all too familiar with.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's great, AJ. And I really do appreciate you taking some time today to be with us and sharing a little bit about your knowledge when it comes to, you know, basically what people are looking at when they're going to be audited. Let's start with the first question. What are the steps to getting and staying certified to an ISO standard?
All right. Good question. I'm going to start with the first 87 easy steps. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to break it down into just some simple ones. And it's just kind of general. The first things first, and I get this question a lot from customers that are reaching out for the first time and they're new to the ISO world. Mm-hmm. One, have you purchased the requirements handbook? If you haven't taken a look at that, and if you don't own it, there is no way for you to know how much of a bridge is needed to reach compliance, right?
Right. Absolutely.
That's going to be the first step, especially with small businesses. You're mostly talking to, in a lot of cases, the owner of the company. So the person that's been there from scratch, they've implemented all these processes. So they have a very good grasp of what's there and what's not. So definitely the first step. Number two is going to really engage with a third party, whether that's going to be an ISO consultant like CORE or a registrar like NQA. Ideally, if you plan on using a third-party consultant for the implementation and the compliance process, really you want to engage with an ISO consultant first. However, if you jumped the gun and reached out to NQA, what we would do is just simply refer you out to CORE and another consultant. You know, we are under the requirements that we have to send out three.
Yeah, you have to send out three, and you have to stay neutral. Which is why you can't have a certification body and a consultant be the same place.
Yep. Conflict of interest. So that's a good point, Xavier. Next, there has to be an evaluation, whether this is done in-house or using a consultant. There has to be an evaluation of where you are at versus total compliance. And you know, that's done through a simple gap assessment. A lot of times, in most cases, the consultant is going to do this. Now, it's just going to depend. Sometimes the customer, they might have their gap assessment done by a supplier. They might actually contract the registrar. But in most cases, that's either going to be done strictly in-house or by a consultant. Right. The next step, I would say, is choosing a path of implementation. So this is where it gets a little bit difficult, and it's going to be dependent on a number of factors. What's the scope look like? What are the interested parties? And the amount of documentation truly is going to be a massive determination on what path to take, because some systems, some management systems are going to be a lot more complex than others.
Yeah. Whether you're doing something like a simple quality management system like 9001, or if you're doing cybersecurity or AS9100, that's, you know, a little more detailed, you got to deal with more regulations and things.
In a lot of cases, you know, companies are going to utilize the consultant route, which is what I always recommend if they're starting from scratch. When I won't recommend that is if, let's say, someone was in corporate quality or heavily involved in quality and QMS documentation and procedures and managing a quality management system and subject to third-party audits for years. If they have that experience and they can tackle development in-house, so be it.
Yeah. I mean, if you've already handled some of that quality stuff, you've all been a quality manager, maybe an MREP for another company, you kind of know what you got to do. So do you need a consultant at that point? That would be a good question.
100%. So once that path is decided, then it's the building phase. That's going to involve the heavy amount of documentation, policies, processes, procedures, etc. With the implementation phase, obviously there's training and cultural development.
Mm-hmm. There is. You're doing something different than what you've done before. Yeah.
Yep. So everyone needs to be on board. And then conducting internal audits, management review, and this is just a general outline of what's needed before registrar like NQA is ready to come in, conduct the audit. So
yeah, that's not much at all, is it?
No, it's easy. It's super easy.
You knock that out in an afternoon, right? No, that is a lot. And once, like you just said, once we get to the third party audits, that's when they're going to really start with you if you're the registrar and the auditor, correct?
Correct. When you engage with a registrar, step one is going to be the initial quoting process. That could be simple. It could be complex. These days, it's leaning towards complex because since COVID, obviously, we have a lot of different unique structures, mm-hmm. even more so than before. I'm sure you guys have seen the same thing where there's when you have the blend of hybrid employees, remote employees, and then fully on-site.
Right.
A lot of things are now outsourced that may have not previously been. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes like the review of scope comes into play where, you know, let's say a company has manufacturing, sales, and distribution of X, Y, and Z product, but then sales is outsourced. It's, you know, that's a consideration. It's like, okay, wait a second. You outsource this process to a complete third party, yet it's in your scope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's take a look at this. So there's little details like that to work through. And I know some CVs have different processes. NQA, we try to get everything up front because when we issue a quotation, we want to be as close to perfect as possible. That mm-hmm. way, you know, when we source auditors for those audits, those days have minimal risk to change.
Right.
It is in our interest to quote those as accurate as possible, just from a pure logistics standpoint.
Right.
And process standpoint.
You're not sending the wrong auditor out to do the work.
At this point, we're totally reliant on the information presented to us. It's happened. The auditor gets on site. They're like, well, there are a lot more process owners that were communicated to me. There are a lot more employees. We need to add time here.
Yeah.
And that does happen. But we'd like to avoid that because, you know, that auditor might not have extra time.
Right.
Their utilization might be through the roof. So after the quoting phase and the contractual phase, we lead into our audits. And so what they consist of, we have our stage one and stage two audits for initial certification. That is going to be the audits that issue the actual certificate. Okay. From there, you know, certificates are on a 3-year cycle. So let's say you get certified in 2023, expiration is going to be 2026. So we had initial certification in 2023. We would have surveillance audits in 2024, 2025, and then the reassessment audit in 2026.
Okay.
And so after that reassessment, the cycle just starts over and on we go with the annual audits.
So stage one and two of your initial audit, then 2 years of surveillance and then a reassessment. I got it.
The stage one, it is required. Most certification bodies, they're going to leave about a 30 to 45 day gap in between the stage one and stage two.
Okay.
Just to allow time to address any findings and any policies that or procedures that need to be addressed and maybe changed and enhanced prior to the stage two. The primary focus of the stage one is the review of documentation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just to see, let's look at what you have written down. Does this cover all the requirements of the standard?
Okay.
Right. Because we have to start there before we can even audit processes. And then facility site specific conditions, with ISO 9001, this could be location, especially if it's warehousing, like how close are you to a major highway, et cetera. It could be a number of different things for okay. EMS. It could be what are some conditions with wildlife or bodies of water, things like that for contamination, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Reviewing the organization's QMS status or management system status and its understanding of the requirements of the standard, in particular, the identification of KPIs, key performance indicators, risks, processes, objectives, and operation of the management system.
Okay.
Overview of applicable regulations. Once again, talk about EMS, let's say we're evaluating the facility site specific conditions and there's manufacturer of chemicals and we're near a body of water, there's going to be additional regulations that apply. And okay. so those need to be reviewed as well. And everyone's favorite part, interviewing of organization's personnel. This helps assess the general readiness to have a stage two audit conducted. The big thing, and this is why we try our best to really have the conversations in the front end during the quoting process, mm-hmm. but confirming the applicability of the scope of the organization's QMS. Now, I mentioned that an outsourced process being within the scope of certification, that would be something that we would address up front. And
right.
that way the auditor doesn't have to bring that up because likely it changes one, the audit plan for stage two, and two, it might actually change the effective headcount of what we're actually auditing. If we have things outsourced, we're not going to audit that. We would audit the control of that, of those outsourced processes, but not necessarily calling up the third party and interviewing salespeople, right?
So you would keep that out of your scope.
And keep it out of the scope. And there are some cases where we've had to be creative. For example, ISO 20000 IT service. Mm-hmm. So we had a company that was outsourcing that completely, but the standard was a requirement for a customer.
Wow. So how do you handle that if they're not handling any of it, but you need to certify them to it? Yeah.
Yeah. So we had to play around with the scope. We had to, their scope before was capturing all the activities that this third party IT service desk was conducting, mm-hmm. but we switched it from that to the management of the third party service organization and okay. and the processes that they have. And that we did loop in their key contact at this third party for an interview during the audit. Mm-hmm. But that is, we definitely had a large adjustment in scope. If we didn't review that scope in the front end and the auditor saw that, they'd be like, hang on, we actually got to press pause on this audit completely right now.
Right.
And then obtaining objective evidence that internal audits and management reviews are being planned and performed and will be completed prior to stage two.
Okay.
If a new company that we're working with asks me, I always recommend them to be completed prior to the stage one. That way there are no questions, but that's the official requirement, is that they're completed before stage two.
Yeah, and maybe some of this is they're trying to get done pretty quick.
And then there's the focus of planning for the stage two audit. So in essence, that's a stage one.
Yeah, it really sounds like the auditor's just making sure the company's ready for stage two.
Yeah, if you break it down simply, review documentation, review of scope, confirmation of scope, review of internal audits, management review, and planning for stage two.
Awesome.
The stage one oftentimes is just one day. So that sounds like a lot of bullet points for one day, but that's the key focus.
And what about stage two then?
During the stage two, the objective of the audit is to assess the organization's adherence to its own policies, objectives, procedures, anything defined, and to ascertain conformance to the requirement of the standard. So that's why we reviewed the documentation of those policies and objectives and procedures in stage one. And now we get to audit the actual things in action as they were defined.
So the process owners would be in stage one, or would they be in stage two?
Process owners, we would still conduct interviews during the stage one, but we will. It's more heavily weighted during the stage two. So
okay.
Get everyone ready for the process owner interviews. And it doesn't stop at the process owners. That can flow down to the employees. Mm-hmm. Top management is not off the hook. Leadership clause, review of documentation records that support the implementation, and it's expected. when we're in there assessing the processes.
Okay.
If nonconformances or opportunities for improvement are identified, they will be documented in a report that the auditor will provide, and that's presented during the closing meeting. So, you know, the audit starts with the opening meeting, it ends with the closing meeting.
Okay.
The key thing with, you know, stage two is objective evidence. So the auditor is going to look for evidence that the policies and procedures are being followed and they're being supported by not only documentation, but by the employees, whether that be through through training, actual fulfillment of these procedures, etc. So objective evidence is going to be your friend.
That seems very reasonable, especially from an audit standpoint.
This ends part one of our two-part series with AJ. Be sure to tune in next week when we'll continue our discussion with AJ, and we'll be covering audit findings, corrective actions, continuous improvement, all from an auditor's perspective. And we want to thank everyone who's listened to our podcast today. We hope it's been informative for you. And if you haven't already followed us on your favorite podcast platform, be sure to do so. That way you won't miss part two with AJ next week on the Quality Hub podcast. Have a great day.